Hi, welcome to Adulting with Ebony, the weekly podcast where my guests and I explore what it means and takes to be a kick-ass and kind adult these days. Expect deep, real and raw, as no topic is out of bounds. We want lives and businesses that are profitable, sustainable and fun. We want lives that feel as good on the inside as they perhaps look on the outside. And that means adulting the fuck up. I'm Ebony Allard. I'm an award-winning coach, author, and speaker. And if you're ready to implement, go to n2n365.club. For now, though, let's get on with the show. Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Adulting with Ebony. Today, I'm joined by Rachel Morris, who is a GP turned executive coach, speaker, and specialist on resilience in the workplace. She works with GPs, doctors, and other professionals in high stress and high stakes jobs to help them beat stress and burnout. Hey, Rachel.
Hi, Ebony. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you for coming and chatting with me. I'm really excited about this chat. It's so nice to get someone from a slightly different industry with this kind of crossover, talking about the same stuff. It's just, yeah, thank you so much for coming and having this conversation.
Oh, I'm looking forward to it.
What does adulting mean to you? Ooh.
That's such a good question. I've been thinking about it for ages. For me, adulting is recognising when I'm in victim mode and being able to get myself out of it.
I love that, because the recognition part is such a big deal. And like, because it kind of almost is those two parts, right? Like, first of all, stage one, like recognizing we're in victim mode. And then stage two, being able to get yourself out of it isn't necessarily something that we're taught.
No, it's amazing we're not taught it anywhere. And you know, I work a lot with doctors, and we're certainly not taught it at medical school. We're not taught much about self-awareness and our own emotions. We're taught a bit about communication skills and perhaps recognizing when other people are angry, but not really much for ourselves. And for me, self-awareness is just key to everything, really.
Yeah, and I also feel like self-awareness generates empathy. Because if you've never experienced what someone is displaying in front of you, it is very difficult to find a level of empathy for them. You might have sympathy for them, but even then, sympathy is difficult to locate if you have never experienced or you can't relate to what the other person is experiencing. So if we've got a greater sense of self-awareness and we can really tap into what is going on inside us, then it's not this weird self-indulgent selfish thing. Like, actually it helps us be a better relational human as well.
Absolutely, because I guess, I mean, emotional intelligence is the big buzzword at the moment, isn't it? And you've got all these different domains. It's not just about being self-aware, because you can be as self-aware as you like, but if you can't manage then your emotions outwardly, or you can't interact with other people, or you can't work out what they're feeling, you're still going to be really ineffective no matter how self-aware you are. And for me, I guess the self-awareness piece, it's I've learned to ask myself the question, what's the story in my head?
I love that, and I'm interested how, so you spoke about emotions then quite articulately as and like emotional intelligence being part of this, and I'm really interested about the link between what we're feeling and the story that we're telling ourselves, and then actually the neuroscience of what's going on when we end up in a situation where we are out of control, or we are in victim mode, or we're not feeling like we're adulting. Because most of the time when we're not adulting as adults, we're having some kind of trauma response, or in fight, flight or fawn mode, right?
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. I think if I look back to all the times when I was a bad doctor, it wasn't because I was a bad person or because I was being lazy or because I wanted to be rude. It was because I was under threat myself. So I remember one time when I was on call, and it was sort of 5 minutes to six in the surgery, and a patient, my childminder rang in and said, can you come pick your daughter up? You know, I've got to take one of the other kids to hospital. I was like, Gran's okay, yeah, I've got to get ready. So I was trying to get ready to go. And then someone rang in for an urgent visit. And it was a lady who had gone off to work, but she lived with her mum and her mum had been really ill. She'd come back from work in the evening. Her mum had been even more ill and she rang up for a visit. And I got on the phone and I said, "What do you mean phoning at this time of night? And how dare you ring? And how dare you go to your work?" And all because I was so stressed about having to get back home. Mm. And I mean, luckily the story has a happy ending. I apologize. I went to visit. We admitted the lady to hospital. It was all fine. But I looked back, I went, how on earth did I act like that? Mm. That was just not how I was taught to act, how I want to act with my patients. It was because I was in my threat zone. I was in my fight, flight or freeze zone. And when we're in that situation, our thinking just becomes so black and white, and we're in protective mode, self-protective mode, aren't we? And we can't think creatively, and we can't think outside of the box, and we can't show empathy to other people. And that's really, really important. So yeah, for being an adult, being able to act outside of that fight, flight or freeze zone is so important.
What are some of the ways? So I did a whole training on the neuroscience of this, right? And like, actually, you know, what happens in terms of what happens in our body, and all the blood rushes up into the top half of our bodies so that we are strong, so that we can fight, because we, like, in the primal times when we were, you know, what we were invented for is a threat of a bear coming to a cave with big claws to kill our babies, right? So we would, all the blood rushes to the top of our body. You're going to tell me, like, I'm telling a doctor how to... Yes, and I'm going to let you go forward from that. But like, so all the blood rushes to the top half of our bodies so that we are stronger, so that we can fight, right? And it also becomes thicker and sticky, and in doing so, cannot move around our brain as fast because it's really thick and sticky, which means we become 20% stupider when we're in fight or flight mode, because the blood actually, like, the neuro pathways aren't working yet. So I may have messed that up royally. What else can you share with us?
Well, I can certainly tell you that in fight or flight, we increase our adrenaline surges, doesn't it? Yeah. And adrenaline makes your heart pump faster. It constricts your blood vessels. So you basically stop your digestion. You stop anything that you don't need to fight a bear, and you increase the things you do need to fight a bear. So you increase the blood supply, I guess, to your muscles and to be able to run. Your blood, when you say it becomes sticky, what happens, actually, you become a bit more what we call hypercoagulable. So say if you had a big gashing wound, you need to be able to heal it. So your body gets ready to heal wounds. Yes. So it upregulates your immune system a little bit as well. It will clot easier. Like I said, your arterioles will vasoconstrict, so that you're actually getting the blood where it needs to be, which is brilliant if you're just about to run 100 metres.
Great if there's actually a bear coming after your cubs. Not so great if...
you're in a traffic jam.
Yeah, or like, you know, you've just seen a message notification come up on your phone, and it's you've already seen 8 and you just want a bit of time to yourself.
Yeah. Exactly. And, you know, I've heard it described as we are sort of stone ages living in this high tech age. The things that are stressing us out and causing problems are not the things that used to stress us out, but we're having the same physiological reaction. Mm-hmm. And I guess the things that are, it's our amygdala that causes this response.
Yeah.
And the things that cause us to have this reaction is a physical threat, which is fairly obvious why. A hierarchical threat. So, you know, when you were living in caves, if the alpha male was threatening you, you would feel that as a hierarchical threat. But the other threat that we had when we were living in caves was the group threat. So the threat of the group not liking us. Because if you were in a group in a cave and the group kicked you out, then you would probably either die of exposure or be eaten by a bear, or both. So in those days, it was a really big deal whether people didn't like us. Now that has carried on, and we're still having that group threat response even now. That's why we find it so difficult to have difficult conversations, give difficult feedback, to conflict with people well, because immediately we're in our fight, flight or freeze response. And that is responsible for all our bad behaviour, I think, or a lot of our bad behaviour.
Yeah, and it's, for me, it's not bad behaviour, it's immature behaviour, right? Because actually that maturity is being able, because, you know, it's why people like Wim Hof are so great, because they're teaching us how to self-regulate our bodies, right? Like the more meditation you do, the more balanced breathing you do, the more we can become, we can recognize, oh, look, because I personally now can tell when my whole body goes into that zone, right? Like I can feel it and I'm like, okay, breathe, you know, and we learn these tools and they're not just platitudes, that they're actually tools that are going to change the physiology that's going on in your body. And I think that's so important for people to understand.
Yeah, it really is, because until we identify that we're in that zone, we can't do anything to change it. I think we're bad at identifying it, and unless you've practiced it beforehand and really thought about it, it's quite difficult to recognize in the moment. Now, I now know that if I feel I've got to do something really fast, I'm probably in my, what I call it being in the corner, when you're triggered into the corner and you sit backed into the corner. Mm-hmm. Or if I feel, if my heart's pumping, or I feel really hot, or I just feel a rage, the red rage come upon me, that's when I know I'm there. But other people feel it as just a very cool calmness. Or some people feel a bit tearful, or, you know, there's all different ways. It's different for everybody.
I think that's so good for people so I talk about the manual of me, and I talk about getting clear on what your signals are. Like, what do those signals mean? Is it when your neck goes red and your ears prickle and you want to cry for no reason and your voice feels like it's going to crack? I also call it having a $1,000 reaction to a $10 problem, right? Like when, if something, someone asks you for something and you're like, no, okay, sorry. You know, like,
ooh, what's got on there?
That wasn't a reasonable response. What is actually going on?
I think so. It's so important. And I think the problem is with today's living and stress is that we have lots of these little mini triggers throughout the day, and we end up being in just a heightened response all the time. And I know there are some people, I mean, it's really bad for GPs at the moment. They're completely overworked. They've got far too much to do. And I think a lot of them are doing the whole day in fight or flight zone, just trying to get through the patients. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and if they start running late, they've got this story in the head going around of, I'm running late, all the patients are going to hate me, they're going to think I'm a bad doctor, blah, blah, blah. So that makes them even later, because they can't think straight in their fight or freeze zones. And then the patients pick up on that and they react to it, and
okay, so some steps that we can help people with. The first one being, like, as you said right at the beginning in your intro, recognizing that you're in victim mode, or recognizing that you're in fight, flight, freeze. And I like to add in fawn, because I have a lot of people pleasing, and fawn is the kind of mend or attend response, which a lot of us do, which is like my needs go out the window and I will please you. It's where that kind of, you must have seen it. So people who just, instead of, you know, fighting, flighting, fleeing, we've got that fawn, which is that mend or attend, which is like, you know, absolute people pleasing, ends up in codependent behavior. Yes. And often codependent behavior is a trauma response. And that's where I'll work with people from, it, of like, actually, how can we recognize the signs that you are in a trauma response, right? Like you're in a place of like, I'll do whatever, because it's that Bambi-eyed, like, it's fear, right? Like it's fear in our bodies. And so first step is taking some time to become more self-aware and recognize what your own unique trigger symptoms are, or signals are. And then what are some ways that we can bring ourselves back to neutral, or bring us just get into a place of abundance and operating again?
Well, firstly, once you've recognized it, the key thing is you just have to give yourself some space. Right, because if you try and change it straight away, you're not going to be able to do that. And there's a brilliant book called The Chimp Paradox by Steve Peters. You've probably read it. And, you know, he calls this amygdala response that we have, he calls it the inner chimp. And what he says in the book is we can't stop the chimp from coming out. Okay, so if you beat yourself up about it, that's not the way to do it. If you say, I'm such a bad person because I'm getting angry all the time, that's not going to work, because it's going to come out. You can't stop chimp from coming out, but we are responsible for managing it when it's out. So give yourself some space. Now, that could be just saying, can I just get back to you about that? Or maybe not replying to that text or email, or, you know, some people I know just count to 10 or go for a walk or go make themselves a cup of tea, but whatever you can do to give yourself space. And I think there's very few situations, apart from if someone's collapsed in front of you, where you actually have to respond immediately. Give yourself some space and time.
Yeah, and I also think it's a habit, right? Like I giving people little verbiage or little words. So I used to feel like if someone asked me a question, or if they could speak to me, or if I could, they would ask me something, and I would often feel obligated to reply straight away or have a very strong opinion on it, because I am an opinionated person. So I would rush that thing. And so things like, I'm not quite sure how I feel about that right now, I'll get back to you. Or I really want to give this my full attention and I can't at this moment, so I'm going to get back to you later. Like, yeah, just finding, preparing yourself with little sentences that you practice saying so that they're easy to find when you're in those moments.
Yeah, 100%. Be prepared. Oh, if this happens, this is what I'm going to do. Once you've got the space, you need to then interrogate reality. You know, actually, what is the story in my head? What am I thinking and assuming here? Did that man cut me up in the car because he hates my guts? That's unlikely, isn't it? So what's actually true? The truth of the matter is he's probably just had a row with his wife and he's late for work now, and he's, you know, got to be at an important meeting and he wasn't thinking about me in the car behind him. That's probably the situation. And once you've asked yourself what's really true, like I say to GPs, you know, the story in your head is, if you're running late, that you're a dreadful doctor, the patients are all going to hate you, you know, you're not practicing well. Actually, what's really true is that you've had some really complicated cases to deal with. You've been a kind and empathetic doctor. And that, yes, of course, nobody likes to be kept waiting, but they will understand that because they want time themselves. Mm. Oh, okay, now I'm believing that story. Well, I'm suddenly not in the corner anymore. I'm suddenly out of the zone.
Yeah.
And if you can take the time and space to think what's the story in my head and what's really true, then you're halfway there. And I find sometimes talking to someone about it can be helpful as well. Just phone a friend, phone someone, you know, sensible who can go, Rachel, you're really overreacting. This is probably what's going on.
I love that. And it's one of the reasons why I'm such an advocate of coaching communities and groups and such places like masterminds, having a place that you can go that isn't your poor, like, I also all the time talk about not going to the butcher for flowers, right? So we want to make sure we're going to the right person for the right thing. And very often it's very, very long-suffering partners that get everything about people's businesses or everything about work and everything about this or one particular friend. And so, and I'm really glad that you have someone who will listen. And at the same time, potentially there's an opportunity to grow the network of people that you share those things with.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, you know, don't struggle with this on your own. Yeah. Talk to someone who's wise, but you're right. Don't go to the person that's just going to go, oh, poor you. Isn't it awful? Isn't it awful? Because that might actually then just stoke your fuel. You want someone who can actually challenge you.
Well, and maybe like in the GP's situation, like maybe it's a colleague, right? Like maybe you find a peer where you're like, can we be accountability buddies on this? Can we check in with each other? Would it be all right if we added each other in a WhatsApp group and we just message each other every time we're like, oh my God, I need to vent. Have you got 5 minutes? Or whatever it is, just to set yourself up to win with those little strategies.
Yeah, absolutely. It is so much about the small things that we can do, not the massive life changes. Just what little things can I do today to actually make that better?
Okay. Is there anything else that you want to share with people if they're experiencing what we've talked about today around fight or flight mode or freezing or fawning, particularly in, you know, modern day threat situations?
I think we need to remember that this group threat situation is real. Okay. And I think, you know, just telling yourself, oh, I just shouldn't care what other people think. That's fine. I don't need, actually you do. Okay. So don't try and fight it, but just look at it for what it is.
I love that. And I feel like it's one of the reasons why when we create stronger sense of community, so rather than focusing on everyone's not going to like me, right? Like actually finding a community where you can open up, where you can lean in, where people get to see the real you. When you believe that and you trust that, and you're like, you know what? I have got a tribe. You know what? I have got a place where I'm safe to share all of me, where I'm not going to be ditched. Then in my experience, that that threat becomes diminished because there is somewhere safe for you to go and you know that you have got something real.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think there's also a piece about not attaching yourself to the outcome of stuff so much. And I think, you know, the brilliant book, Fuck It, by John Parkin, I think that has really helped me in the last few months. Just think, actually, why am I so bothered about this? Could I just say fuck it?
Yes, absolutely. Oh, I have a couple of questions, little quick fire questions. I say they're quick fire. Do you look at me and be like, that's too big a question? But is there an area of your life that you like consciously adult in or like have to like parent yourself around because it's something that you know you always slip into victim or child mode around?
Yeah, actually, I had been thinking about this, and I would say one area of my life that I do slip into victim mode is weirdly parenting. Mm-hmm. So I have two teenagers and a 9-year-old and love them to bits, but you know, as a teenager you're not that self-aware, are you? And you can like lash out at people, and I'm trying to run a business and they're trying to have their lives, and I carry a lot of the emotional load in the house, and I can really slip into victim mode and woe is me and why doesn't anyone understand me, and but you can't be like that with your kids and you can't lose it with your kids, and you have to, so I have to consciously really manage my emotions so that I'm just being the best mum that I can. So that's I think where I'm the most careful, because I think it's my most triggers I get as a parent. You get triggered all the time with fear for your kids, fear that you're not being good enough, fear that you're not being a good enough mum or right, or what's going to happen to them and what if they don't get this or that. You know, it's just this fear, this fight or flight all over the place.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I think it's so important for people to see someone like you that they may have a picture of. You know, you're a doctor and you're on my podcast and you're doing that, and you still, you know, have to consciously adult. So thank you.
Oh my gosh. That.
And the second one is, and you mentioned it then, so I love that. What is your relationship with fear like? Has it changed?
I think it has changed. You know, people would say to me, oh, Rachel, you're quite courageous because you get out and do new stuff all the time. And yes, I do new stuff, but I'm really scared about other things. I think everybody has their own particular fear. And I guess, you know, I fear being cruel to people or hurting people's feelings. I really fear that, and I think that holds me back from having the honest conversations that I need to have sometimes with people. Mm. Yeah, I'm still working on that.
You and me both. And I think it's it's an ongoing journey, right? Because there's always going to be deeper layers with that, and our relationship with fear is not one that we can or should ever willingly want to abandon. Like, fear is really important, and I talk a lot about making friends with fear because it tells you that you're learning and growing.
No, I 100% agree. You know, we are safe because our amygdalas have kept us safe until now. Mm. So actually our threat system has helped us. It's just a bit overactive.
Yeah, it is right now. It is just a little bit, you know, it gets to adapt and we get to help it adapt and know what's appropriate.
Absolutely.
My last little thing, will you end on I'm an adult but with me?
Yes, I'm an adult, Ebony, but I am still stupidly overly concerned about my appearance. And I stupidly let it affect how my confidence.
Yeah.
Weird.
It's weird, but I was talking about this with a friend yesterday. We grew up, like, the world has changed. There are some positives, there are some negatives. The world has changed quite a lot since when we were kids. I was a teenager in the early 90s when it was essentially magazines on magazines on magazines of people who were so skinny they looked dead, right? Like, heroin chic was a thing. And when you are brainwashed with it, so for like 20 years of your life, however clever you are, however informed you are, however much you know, it's utter rubbish. It is very, very difficult to choose to override that on a daily basis. So I am with you, and it's something I practice every day.
Yeah, absolutely. Some days are better than others, but work in progress.
Yes, I am an adult, but I'm going to carry on the theme. Like, I wish I could be the girl in a Little Miss Sunshine and just wear my swimming costume and hold my belly out and look at myself in the mirror and feel proud. And like we just said, you know, I'm really working on it.
Brilliant.
Yeah. If people want to find out more about you, come and listen to your podcast. Where's the best place for them to do that?
So, well, you can subscribe to my podcast, which is called You Are Not a Frog, and that is on iTunes and all places where you can get podcasts, on Spotify and on Android platforms as well. They can find out more about my work at shapestoolkit.com, and they can contact me at rachel@wildmonday.co.uk, and I'm also on Twitter at Dr. Rachel Morris, and on LinkedIn it's just Dr. Rachel Morris, or all over the place Dr. Rachel Morris.
We will put all of those links in so they're easy and clickable for people, and people can come find you. Thank you so much for your time and for talking to me today.
Thank you, Ebony. It's been brilliant.
This has been Adulting with Ebony. I have been Ebony. You have been great. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for listening, for sharing, for rating and reviewing. If you have enjoyed this free content, please take a moment to rate us, to share an episode, to spread the word on social media, or to come find me on Instagram and tell me what you thought. On Instagram, I am at Ebony Allard, and I will see you in the DMs. Bye.